Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Owl Post for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me is the just amazingly fantastic and utterly wonderful Drea Kaufman.
Hello, everyone.
So, before we get into anything else, did you see the amazing Harry Potter Lego set that I can't stop drooling over?
I did! I just wish that I had, you know, a surplus of $200 or $399.
Yeah, you know, like, I had a truckload of galleons, you know. So, it's so cool,
right?
Though.
I wonder how much, how many dollars that would equate to.
That's a good question. I wonder what the I bet there's a conversion rate on Google. I'll bet there is.
Yeah, I'm looking right now. We're gonna find out. Okay, so one sickle. Okay, so let's see here. Can you do a converter? Here we go. Muggle.
I love that Google has everything. I mean, they also have my whole life story, but
I know. So $399 for the Hogwarts castle with the 83 galleons, 2 sickles, and 22.
Wow.
Units.
Apparently, galleons are got a really good exchange rate. Good night.
Yeah. Although that still seems like a lot of money.
Oh, man, that castle is so cool. You know, I might have to save my money. I don't know. But we're not here to talk about...
I'll come over and play Legos with you.
that'd be awesome. That's awesome. Bring Olive and Rob and we can have a great time. So, yeah, but we're not here to talk about that. Just a quick reminder before we dive into our chapter, Rita Skeeter's Scoop. You can find us all over the place. We are on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. Of course, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, where you should be finding us and giving us a review and a star rating and let everybody know what you think of Owl Post and help other people find the show. You can also find us online at thenerdparty.com, where if you go over to thenerdparty.com/contact and you choose a show and you choose Owl Post, you can send us an email, which would be great. We love getting emails. And so all the different ways that you can contact us. But it was a very eventful chapter last episode as we had the Yule Ball. A lot happened, and now everybody is trying to recover. And so I love how, like, they get up the next day. You know, in Britain, it's Boxing Day. It's much quieter. Everybody's kind of, like, yawning and lazy. And I love that the first thing we learn is that the reason that Hermione's hair was so smooth in that evening, and I love how she's like, you know what, it is way too much trouble every day, I just don't care, and that makes me love Hermione so much.
Agreed, because I legit know all about that.
You got the frizz problem too?
No, just about taking the time to, like, do your hair.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I also, they have this whole conversation, you know, they're talking about, The revelation that they heard from, you know, Hagrid about him being a giant and pure giant and all this. And Hermione's talking about it's awful, this bigotry. But she's like, I always kind of suspected he had to be. I mean, couldn't be pure giant because they're like 20 feet tall. And I'm thinking, so Hagrid's dad was with a giant. That seems odd.
Yeah, as an adult, you're like, logistically,
I don't know how
that
works.
How did that work?
I honestly don't know how that works. But I'm not gonna even think about it, you know, because it doesn't really matter. But it is interesting. I do kind of like how Hermione talks about this whole idea of, you know, we've got all of these people that the wizarding world has prejudices against, like giants or werewolves or anything, and how these people aren't necessarily always what they seem to be. And I think that's fascinating to me because, you know, Rowling has done a great job. Obviously, last book we met a werewolf who wasn't terrible, right? So, you know, we've also we know Hagrid too, right? And the fact that he's half giant, but is this lovable, amazing person? I think it does make it really interesting. Whereas, you know, Ron has a completely different view, although he's not willing to challenge Hermione at this exact moment because they've apparently come to like an armistice agreement where they're just not going to speak of the row that happened just the night before. They're just not going to talk about it. And so he's not really willing to challenge her. But I do love that Rowling has him like shaking her head when he's not looking like she just doesn't get it.
It's true. It's a little bit, it's a little bit crazy of Ron, not of Hermione, of Ron, that he just is so entrenched in his ideas and he knows Hagrid, and this should be a good opportunity for him to at least be open to a discussion. And the fact that he's just sort of like, no. Was like, yeah.
It makes me wonder, you know, it's going through Ron's head, you know, like, and like you said, like, how many giants does he know? You know, like, he doesn't know any,
right?
He has met a werewolf, and you know, Lupin was great, except for that time he tried to, you know, kill them all, and so.
Right.
But I mean, it does bring up
that he was willing to look past
it
that.
It does bring up this really great point. But on the other side, obviously there's this extended history that, you know, Hermione is sometimes quick to discount. So I think one of the things that I'm most fascinated by, just as we've been talking about the house elf thing, is Rowling does a pretty good job of being fair and balanced in the situations like this. And so I'm really interested to see how this continues, you know, because I feel like she has done a pretty good job of not just saying one side or the other is right. It's usually somewhere in the middle. And right now, again, Hermione and Ron are kind of polar opposites with each other. And that makes for a really interesting, like, okay, where will we come down then in the end? So, and honestly, with the giant question, I think we might have to wait. So. Because it doesn't really get answered as much in this book. I'm sorry to spoil it for everybody.
Yeah.
But I also like how they're talking about how, you know, Harry starting to think about, you know, oh, great. Now I really have to start worrying about this egg thing. And, well, you know, Cedric did give him that idea. But he's really not all that happy about Cedric right now, so he doesn't really want to pay any attention to what Cedric has to say.
I thought it was so cute that he was so, like, jealous that he didn't want to take his advice, which is very different from the movie. In the movie, they're like, you know, he's like, okay, I'm going to go take a bath, where this one, he was kind of more like, I don't really want to listen to him unless they run out of options entirely.
Yeah, it is. I think it's one of these things that really endears us to Harry, because we've kind of all had, I think, that situation where we don't really like the person who our crush likes, you know, and we kind of internally, we don't hate them, right? But we really don't like them.
But there's that part of you that's like, I'm sure they're a great person. I just don't like them.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sure they're very nice and have lots of qualities, but I don't
like them. And it is very cute to watch Harry deal with this. But they do end up back in classes. The holidays are over and they get to care of magical creatures and Hagrid is not there, but Professor Grubbly Plank is there, who we had mentioned books before. And she won't tell them why Hagrid is gone. He's indisposed. And instead of dealing with the blast-ended skewers, she's going to teach them about unicorns, which kind of sounds awesome, honestly.
Yeah, and I really like that only unicorns prefer a woman's touch. I thought that was hilarious. So funny.
Yeah, it makes sense in some ways. You know, I feel like maybe most of the time, most of the men that they have, you know, met are trying to, like, ride them or, you know, capture them. And so, yeah, it was interesting. I also think it's kind of cool, just this beautiful white unicorn who makes the snow even look gray and has, like, golden hooves. And it just, like, it just sounds so majestic. I honestly want to meet a unicorn now.
I know, me too. I'd like to meet a new unicorn. Or I'd like to meet a unicorn. new or used or older, young.
Yeah, let's not be ageist against unicorns. Come on.
God, they're already sexist.
I mean, how? You know? I mean, they are sexist, right? So, yeah. Gosh. But
or they're just like my husband and prefer a woman's touch. You know, I mean, whatever.
I mean, I'm with your husband. I'm just saying. You know, ladies' hands do, for the most part, tend to be a little bit softer. You guys moisturize a little bit more than we do, right? So, for the most part, but.
Now we're going down.
Yeah, I'm not even gonna continue because then Malfoy comes in and screws all of this up by talking about, "Hey, you're looking for your douche." Malfoy,
your giant, friend?
Yeah, your giant friend, and he is just laying it on thick, and he gives him this article, and of course, it's all about Rita Skeeter, and I really like this article here in the sense that she completely 100% shows her hand in what she thinks of journalism, and just the way that she deals with Rita here. And the article is so classic, like, journalism today, where we take one idea, right? And she even says it later. So just to kind of talk about Rita as a whole, because we'll meet her later in Hogsmeade. She's walking in with her entourage, and she's talking about how, this would be a great idea for an article. Now we just have to find some facts to figure it. You know, like, the whole idea of you already have your mind made up about a subject, and then you just write around that, and you find anything that helps make that possible. And it's just, like, the worst kind of journalism ever. And this article, man, even reading it, and I know this is fake, it makes me so mad.
I know, it does. It's because it's ridiculous. And the whole thing is just, I don't know, it's just draped in horrible, out of context, untrue statements. Mm-hmm. And it's terrible.
I think what it is, too, is that it's facts of situations without the context. And the context is being supplied by her. And she's making up the context. So, and it's the problem of having facts without the truth of the matter. And she has none of the truth. She's just twisting the facts to fit what she wants them to say. And it's just awful. It's just awful stuff. And so Harry is super mad at Malfoy, of course. And all the way up.
Rightfully so.
Yeah. And all the way up to the castle, Harry is just livid. Pravarti, I love how she's like, I don't know, I kind of liked this class. It was awesome. And Harry's like, I maybe should have been a little bit nicer to her at the ball.
Yeah. I probably shouldn't have been so angry with everyone else and standoffish. She's really quite nice.
Well, and she has a point, and so does Hermione. You know, the class was really good. They learned a lot. But I love that, you know, she reads the article because, of course, she was up with the unicorn and didn't have any of this going on. And she's like, oh, my gosh, this is awful. And then they start wondering, how in the world did she get this information? Because she's not even supposed to be allowed in the castle anymore.
Right. I mean, they're discussing, like, how could this, it's so specific and conveniently timed to it having been shared and overheard by Harry and Ron. And, you know, they were there, so they would think they would have heard her. And it's just mysterious how she gets this information. And it's like, well, maybe someone overheard and shared with her separately. You know, maybe it came out. They speculate maybe Hagrid shared it with her when he was interviewing. And they're like, no, he didn't even tell us. He definitely wouldn't have told her. So, you know, it's so interesting to see how that sort of they're trying to figure out how this happens, and this won't be the only time that this happens either.
Right. And you know, they're wondering, does she have an invisibility cloak? How did she get there? You know, and because the boys are like, well, we were there, so if she had been there, we would have seen her in that courtyard, you know, and we didn't see her. And so they have no idea how this happened. And I love Hermione's like, well, I did kind of like Care of Magical Creatures, but then she sees Harry's face and she's like, but of course I want Hagrid back. Just like, you know, there is that very logical part of Hermione where, you know, it's the uber student, you know, and for her that's really what matters. And for Harry, you can understand why he's taking this so hard, because Hagrid is one of his best friends, one of his only real friends, you know, next to Ron and Hermione.
Yeah. It's his confidant, right? It's his, I don't want to say father figure or parental figure, but it's just the person he can go to get that warm and fuzzy and genuine, you know, like everyone sort of has their own role in this. And I think I always felt like Hagrid was his feel good person. He could talk to him about not feeling good, and he would always kind of come at it with this positive approach and always feel very calm, you know, like, oh, Harry, you're doing great, you know, and he always had like that approach. And to lose that, I don't know, positive person and optimistic person is difficult. You know, he likes to have him around. He's a genuinely nice guy.
Well, and I love that they get to go to Hogsmeade in this chapter. I always enjoy when they're getting to go to Hogsmeade, and I love how they're passing the lake and Crumb gets up on the bow of the ship and jumps off into the water, and they're like, that water's got to be freezing. And Hermione's like, well, it's not as, I mean, it's probably a lot warmer than where he's from. She's like, you know, he's actually really nice. He doesn't really like it much at Drumtring. He likes it here. And I love how Ron, again, he just keeps his mouth shut. He's like, I'm not going to say anything. But it does make it really interesting to me, because I like the little bits that we're getting here in the book that we don't like get in the movie, where Crumb is a much more fleshed out character.
Yeah, he is more dimensional than this, like, almost angsty, quiet, I want to say Russian-like character. He has this very, like, staunchness about him in the movies that he kind of comes across as dumb. And in the book, we get much more of a dynamic character, you know, and you get the impression that maybe the relationship he's built with, like, Karkaroff is a little, like, strict, demanding parent, if you will. And it's just a much different and richer character than we sort of get very superficial in the book. And it's interesting, we see him dive in to the lake and, you know, they ask about, well, what about the giant squid and, you know, things like that. But just thinking about it, you know, that's going to come back. She doesn't do anything. She does everything for a reason. So that's going to come back around here at some point. So.
Well, and it exactly what you just said, because they get to Three Broomsticks and Hermione's like, well, look who's here. Does he ever go into work? And it's Ludo Bagman talking to a bunch of goblins. And Harry's like, no idea why he would be here either, because there isn't anything going on with you know, the tournament for a few weeks. And so also I love that Harry thinks to himself that, you know, he hasn't seen Bagman look this bad since the Dark Mark appeared at the tournament at the beginning of the book. And so of course, you know, Bagman sees him and they end up having a conversation. And things are not really going well at the ministry right now at all.
No, I mean, we find out that Mr. Crouch is missing. He's sending like instructions in via Owl, but he's not been in the office for several weeks, which is disturbing to, you know, Bagman. And I like the joke about, well, maybe that means that maybe Percy's poisoning him because he thinks they'll make him head of the department. It cracked me up. But yeah, there's just a lot going on, and it's just adds this level of mysteriousness to an already sort of it just adds a whole nother element to this already high, like, intensity and very tense. Yeah, the tension level is much higher now. So,
well, and on top of that, they still haven't found Bertha Jorkins.
Right. So he's like, well, maybe she disappeared like that.
Which,
not anything you want.
He's like, oh, goodness, that is. And Harry's like, oh, that's not good. And then what's so interesting is that, again, Bagman offers him help with the tournament.
Yeah, which is weird. And I think Harry had such an interesting response. His gut instinct is to be very ethical in this situation. He's like, oh, no, it's okay. I'm fine. Like, I got this. It's all right. It's all right. And he's like, maybe I should have taken him up on that. I don't know what I'm doing. But his gut reaction is to be like, oh, no, I'm good.
Well, and I think his reasoning is somewhat sound. You know, he doesn't really know Bagman. And he also, you know, again, Harry is just, he's so good in the sense that, like, are you asking Cedric if he needs help? So I think he just feels very uncomfortable with the situation. And I think, you know, his experience with adults, I think, has made him wary of adults, you know, with.
Yeah, he's not very trusting, and justifiably so.
Yeah, which, yeah, makes complete sense. And so I love that he actually turns down Bagman. I think it's really smart. And then, you know, of course, run in where we talked about with Rita Skeeter again, and the Three Broomsticks, and her and Hermione really get into it, and she starts talking about how, oh, you don't want to come at me, you know, and if I the things I could tell you about Ludo Bagman, and like it gets really heated, and Hermione is so angry about what she did to Hagrid, she storms off. And they make their way to the castle and start knocking on Hagrid's door so they can go get him to come back so they can show that Rita Skeeter woman. I just love when Hermione gets all self-righteous in the best way. It's awesome.
And I love that they were like, the last time we saw her this angry, she punched Malfoy, you know, like that lets you know, like, level of anger there really was.
I think they're following, hoping, and that's going to happen again.
Right. But I mean, justify. I mean, she calls her like silly girl, and I think that's really what just sets Hermione off. Like, I would set me off too, but I mean, that's really what did her in.
Well, I absolutely love that they're knocking on the door of Hagrid's, and Hagrid, you know, isn't answering, and then who answers the door? But Dumbledore.
I actually like, my favorite part about that though is that it's Hermione, and she's just like, she is fresh off her confrontation with Rita Skeeter, and she is just fully flaming, knocking on that door, and it's later described as she basically tried to knock down the door, and she's just shouting, who cares what that woman thinks, we want to see you. And I love that it was Hermione. I feel like it wouldn't have had the same effect if it wasn't Hermione. So,
well, and what's funny is that because it's Dumbledore, and the relationship that Hermione has with Dumbledore, it's not the same as him and Harry. So she's like, oh, you know, like,
holy
oh, crap,
what
you
did
know,
I just do?
The ultimate authority figure. And I just love that, you know, Dumbledore uses the beauty of these kids coming to get Hagrid to come back to work. And it's really beautiful because, you know, he says, look, they are living proof of the people that love you and want you back. And he's like, I have had letters from former students who remember you from years back, and they want you back. And I just love the, you know, Hagrid is feeling that feeling of, you know, being mistreated and being maligned for no good reason, really. And, you know, I love the way that Dumbledore handles it, too. He's like, you know, look, if I crawled under a desk every time I got a letter that, you know, well, I would be under a desk all the time because I get a letter at least once a day telling me I'm not doing something right at the school. And I think I don't know. This is the scene that just makes me fall in love with Dumbledore all over again.
I do love this. And I love that we get And I love that he's trying and in a very genuine way. And I love that he sort of like forgets to, he's like, oh, I'm not listening. I can't hear anything you're saying right now. You know, he's just trying to help the best way he can. And then he knows when it's time to take his leave and kind of set the line like, all right, you've moped enough. Like, I let you wallow. I let you feel bad. And now we're done and we're over it. And we're going to move on and you're going to show up and you're going to be amazing because I know you can. And I like that he knew where to draw that line. And then I love that Hagrid basically talks himself out of it, like out of it being a bad thing. You know, he talks himself into it. You know, oh, well, yeah, maybe you're right. And I'm just being ridiculous. I'm just being ridiculous. I'm being really ridiculous. Let's do something else. I like that he like talks himself back into being okay with it. I thought that just that process was just so cute to watch it play out.
Well, and you know, I have to say one of the funniest things, Dumbledore talks about his brother Aberforth and how he was prosecuted for practicing inappropriate charms on a goat. And it was all over the papers. And he's like, did Aberforth hide? No. I mean, not sure he can read, but...
I'm not entirely convinced he knows how to read, but that's okay. Maybe less brave. And it's like he started to use that as an excuse. And then he's like,
oh, just so great. Well, and one of the beauties of this whole thing, too, is Hagrid talking about how great Dumbledore has been to him and how he's always been there for him and stood up for him, and especially once his dad died and everything. And it's just, it's really beauty. And then Hagrid turns to Harry and he says, you know, you kind of reminded me of me when I first met you. You know, you didn't have parents, you know, and you didn't have really anybody take care of you. And it really, again, it shows the way in which these characters, Hagrid and Harry, have so much in common. I think one of the things that kind of draws them together, and Hagrid actually just kind of makes it explicit here. And I really like that.
I agree. I just like how well this plays mm-hmm. out. You know, he lets him, you know, hey, it's tough, but that he uses a personal experience to bond, you know, hey, I'm not perfect either. Let's move on. It's okay.
You know, and I think it's also really nice to see Hagrid be like, you know what? You need to win, Harry. You need to win and show them all who's, you know, who's the man, you know, and show them that we belong, basically. And he's like, how's that egg
coming?
No
pressure.
Harry's like, oh, it's great. And then I absolutely adore that Harry feels so awful for lying to Hagrid that it's different than like brushing off Hermione or Ron with this. And that is the thing that kicks him in the behind enough to say, you know what, maybe I need to let my pride go and take Cedric up on his hint just to see if it works, because I can't let Hagrid down now. And there's just something I find really beautiful about that with Harry, because it's not about him winning the contest for him. It's about other people. And I think that's such a beautiful, beautiful thing to see. That the actions we take in something like this can have an impact on other people. So, you know, whether you're, you know, a sports star and, you know, you winning is not just about you. It's about the people that are fans of you and, you know, the people that could be watching you that are less fortunate than you, that, you know, you give them some joy and all those kind of things. And all of that plays into what's happened here. And so I love this moment with Harry. And again, his heart being right that he can't let his friend down, and he won't let that lie become something that, you know, you could call it a little white lie, but he won't let that become something that hurts his friend. I just think that there's a lot of character there. Harry has so much character.
I find it, I think my favorite and most interesting part about this is there's so much that people don't learn in life in general. And one of those things I think a lot of people struggle with is putting aside their ego or their pride to make the right decision. And I think, and maybe just because I'm in the corporate world and we see it a lot there, people get really wrapped up and make decisions based on, you know, pride and things like that. It's really nice to see a young teenager understand and appreciate that sometimes there's something bigger than yourself. So kind of along the lines of what you're talking about, but more specifically that he acknowledged he needed to put aside that pride and that ego and do what's going to get him what he needs to do, even if it is taking Cedric's, you know, what he refers to as cryptic statement. So, you know, even if it means he has to accept that his, you know, rival may have figured something out that he didn't. So I think that's very big of him. And I know plenty of adults who can't do that. So that to me is one of the amazing moments that we learn and really speaks to Harry's character, which we've been talking about all four books. But it just really paints that picture of how really, truly mature Harry can be when he needs to be.
Well, and I think the beauty of it is it goes back all the way to book two where, you know, Dumbledore talks about it's our choices that make us who we are. And here Harry is making the choice to put aside himself and his pride to do something for somebody else. And again, I think that's the thing that makes Harry such a great character and somebody that we can look up to, is that he is somebody who will continually put aside himself for other people. And that's the you know, very definition of true love, right? Is to love others in spite of yourself, really, you know? And I think that's the beauty of this. And I just love it. I absolutely love this ending to this chapter, and then we'll dive into that next week of you know, him taking Cedric up on his advice and seeing how that goes of taking a bath. So but before we dive into the bath with Harry, where can everybody catch up with you there? Because I gotta say, this is the one thing that the movie does so well. I want to take a bath in that bath. That is amazing.
I know. Although I just like that we started on a weird, we got to like a weird note at the beginning of the episode and we end on a taking a bath with Harry note. This episode is just not appropriate. Or at least that's just the 12-year-old in me.
I got a 12-year-old in me too.
If you want to come and talk to me, about being a unicorn or taking a bath with Harry, you can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
Well, you can find me on Twitter, MattRushing02, and I'm on Instagram under the same name. I am here on the network with John Mills talking about Star Wars with Aggressive Negotiations. Honestly, if you love Star Wars, it's the show for you, so make sure you check it out. I'm over on the Trek FM network talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine with The Orb, Chris Jones. I also do the 602 Club, which is our general geek show. A lot of fun there. Eagerly anticipating as we record this. We just had San Diego Comic-Con, got another trailer for Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald, which looks kind of incredible. So we're looking forward to talking with that on the 602 Club with Drea. And then you can find me on Cinema Stories with my good pal Courtney, where we talk all about films through the lens of faith. But we want to say thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.